October 1991, there was a tropical hurricane in Jamaican waters and started moving north and collided with systems in the border of Canada and the US with another cold front and became an incredible storm. And that storm is actually depicted in the story or movie called The Perfect Storm. Some of you may have seen it, which I can see if you're in line. Okay, sad thing about that particular story is that the people on the boat don't survive. They die. But they've been trying through this event of this storm to actually get to safety, and every time they try, they seem to find themselves being cut off by the power of the storm. We were going to show you a clip, but we put it up on the screen, you can hardly see it, so you're missing out on that little bit anyway. But they got to a point where they saw sunshine, and it was like, wow, we've made it. And you can see the relief in the men on the boat, and then all of a sudden, the colour of the just goes dark, because the sun has gone, and the captain of the boat has been striving and striving to get them to safety. Suddenly sees the cloud come over and he feels like, what's going to happen now? And he says these words, it's something like this, he says, it's not going to let us out. The storm is not going to let us out. And he starts swinging on the wheel of the boat swings around and they start and they're up and down and there's waves crashing on the boat. And then the man that's been beside him the whole time has been struggling to get it. You just see his face almost go white, his eyes open. Because as he looks ahead, there's this enormous wave. And in a sense, for them, safety is on the other side of that wave. But this wave is over 30 metres long. And it said that that particular storm, a real storm, these waves were 30 metres and higher. If you want to think, it's over 100 feet. So they were huge waves. The end result was they didn't get over that wave. And for some of them, as they saw that wave, I think they were probably thinking to themselves, we've tried so much, we've tried everything we could. But our attempts are futile, there's no hope. Why bother anymore? I think for us, many of us in life, we can feel the same way. We can feel like, why bother? There seems to be no hope. The thing in front of us is so big, we just can't get past it. I think many of us feel like that. The two men that we've just read about in the section of Matthew, I think it's two men who may at the time felt much like that. Would have felt that there was no hope, might as well give up. Two men, and I guess many people would look at it and say, gee, they're different, and yet they were very much the same. And what we want to do is have a look at them. The first man is a man with leprosy, and the second man is a centurion. And ask yourselves, what do these two men have in common? And what is it, if you like, that the battle they both faced? They were outcasts and outsiders. That was part of their problem and struggle. We're going to look at both men as we go. The first is the leper. He's a leper, and therefore he's an outcast, an outsider. We don't often see much, we hear much about leprosy today. But so you understand what it's a little bit like, apparently it starts off with little spots, apparently in your hands or in your eyelids. And it begins to grow and eventually spread over your whole body. So if I come over to the girls here and I start having a close look, have you got any spots? Ooh, I don't know. I've sometimes got a few spots in my hand, I think, ooh. If I think about leprosy, I could become very white. But, well, that's only the little spots, but something else happens. That when your hair turns white, so if you're, oh dear, I've got some white hair too. Oh, it's okay, I'm not getting leprosy. Oh, Ned's going like this. We don't know. But what else? I mean, no, don't we all feel that? How many of you are starting to think, maybe I've got leprosy? But you know, there are other things connected with it. One thing is that you tend to lose your sense of feeling. You don't feel things. You put your hand on something, you don't notice it touching anything. And of course, when you feel like that, you can be injured and not realise, and therefore you can become infected. Then you get terrible sores. But it seems like this disease, leprosy, starts from the outside and eats into the bone. And some of you may have seen people who have struck with leprosy in other countries where you'll actually see parts of their hands and arms and limbs actually gone if they're falling off. A lot of pretty sad sort of situation. Someone said a leper is a human scabber. That is because all the sores around them, they're all scabbing over, and it's just such a terrible, terrible disease. When you became a leper, you then lived in a colony outside of the city. When you used to walk down the road, you'd have to call out, unclean, unclean, because people thought they'd catch it. Okay? And I want you to start thinking about, he's an outcast, he's an outsider, how is he? Walking down the street, announcing to everybody, you've got this terrible disease, don't come near. And in his country, to say hello included a hug. He couldn't do that, because he's not allowed to touch anyone, and they're not supposed to touch him. Can you imagine how he would have felt? Because he would have been, in a sense, rejected, even by his own church. The Jewish nation, if you like, is a church. And they said no. He's forced to leave his family. Can't be with them. How hard would it be? He probably had no dignity and certainly not much in the way of self-respect. Pretty tough. He's isolated, living alone, but still among the people. And again, someone else said, when you're alone, it's like walking on the edge of hell. There's no one there with you, you feel so isolated. Well, for him, he's an outcast, an outsider, and I think he would have felt much of that. He's alone with his pain, he's alone with his poverty because he didn't get a job, and ultimately, I guess, he'd be alone with his death. It's not a nice picture. Certainly not one that I guess any of us would put our hands up and say, let me have a go. I certainly wouldn't. But yes, this is his situation. Now that brings us then to the centurion. He's an outsider also, but for a different reason. He's a Gentile living in the land of Israel. Worse still, he's actually a commanding officer in the country's army that's controlling Israel. And so he's isolated too, even though he's got his army officer and buddies, if you like, within there. People that are under his care, they're reaping. But he is, in a sense, still alone. He's isolated. And even though he will find out he doesn't have things that are really helpful in his situation, he was still in a city, in a country, where there were people who had actually devoted themselves to killing people like him. I had a name called the Zealots. If you actually were to read through the disciples of Jesus, you'll notice one of them is called Simon the Zealot. And the Zealots, in some cases, have devoted themselves to kill people like the centurion. So he's always, if you like, walking around, could have been saying, who's going to attack and kill me? Who's going to try and get rid of me? So he's in that situation. I would actually probably describe them as both being quite desperate, and desperate for slightly different reasons. The centurion, because if you remember as we were reading, he's concerned about servants. They have been a very valuable servant, but I actually think he genuinely cared for this servant. He genuinely cared for him. We notice in verse 6 it actually says the servant was paralyzed and actually in great suffering. And the centurion cared enough for this man to actually say, I've got to do something for him. And he's desperate about it. He's a rich and wealthy man. I know he's rich and wealthy because I read in the account of this man in the book of Luke that he actually helped the Jews build their own synagogue or their own church. He was a wealthy man, and in his town in Capernaum, he's actually considered a very good man. Even the Jews, it says, loved him. But that's in his town. And as I said, the Zealots who are outside of the town, they don't care about what he's doing. He represents the enemy. And he represents not only the enemy, but one of the leaders of the enemy. Let's try and get rid of him. But he's got a servant who's in trouble. And I believe he really cared for the servant. If he's a rich man, what's one servant? I can go and buy another one. How many of us have something go wrong, you know, TV breaks down, what do we do? Just go and buy another one. And that's the same sort of thing. A slave would have been nothing more in those days for people that simply an item like a television or whatever. And he cared enough for this man to try and do something. And I imagine as a wealthy man he would have been the best doctors and specialists or whatever. But still no such a help for him. because his servant, we read, is nearly dead. So he genuinely, his desire to help him, he's desperate. Let's go back to the leper. Why is he desperate?
You could probably work it out already.
Oh, he's going to die if he has this disease keeping on going. But I want to think about another reason that he's desperate. And it's got actually the sense that it's a religious one. Because he's unclean, and he has to go around saying, I'm unclean, unclean. It's not just simply saying, oh, well, you've got a bit of a bad day. It's actually the sense, you are bad. You are bad. Not just dirty, you are bad. And it's, I guess the way we wouldn't want to think about it, but in fact there are three people I mentioned very briefly. Miriam, sister of Moses. Gehazi, who was a servant of a man called Elijah, and a king called Uzziah. All of them were punished by God for something they did wrong, and the punishment was the disease leprosy. And throughout the Bible, you'll actually find leprosy connected with sin. It's almost a picture of sin. And if you're a leper, for most people, they'd have been thinking, I've done something terrible. I must have sinned in some way. I must have done something wrong, because why otherwise do I have this disease? Walking around, it would have been, I think, consistently in his mind, the sense of shame, I've done something terribly wrong. I've missed out on what God wants me to do. That sense of shame that would have been on him all the time. That's the sort of desperation that would have been with him. Completely desperate. Leprosy is actually what happens on the outside. It's actually, if you like, the sign of the problem inside. And I think sin is exactly the same. The actions we see around us today, the way people live and the things they struggle with, are actually like the symptoms of the disease leprosy, and it's the symptoms of the disease sin. We have problems within. You have to think about it. Jesus said in Mark chapter 7, it's not what a person puts into them that makes them unclean, which is the same way they think about leprosy, unclean. He said it's what's within them already. And out of their heart, he says, comes not the food that they've been eating, but the things that make them who they are, their sinful attitude and actions. And that's why we see selfishness today. That's why we see love that's actually put forward, but it's really a fake. Love that's presented in our world today, really, it's just fake. Fakery. Pretend stuff. We see broken families and we see broken relationships. We see inappropriate care. We see people that should have trusted or been able to trust, but we can't. We see people being abused and suffering terribly. That's all part of the symptoms of the problem within. Just like the leper had this disease of leprosy, and you needed help. So do you and I, because just like leprosy, we are just the same way. And for this leper, I guess you could probably imagine him there. He is walking down the road, and there have been people looking at him, pointing the finger and sneering, you sinner. And that's how often we think about other people that are terrible too. You point the finger at them and say, gee, I'm glad I'm not like you. You point the finger, and it's just like this leper, he was desperate. Desperate because of his situation. He is far from God because he thinks, I'm a sinner. I got no hope. I guess it's been like that huge wave those men in that boat faced in the movie. How am I going to get past it? And why would I even bother to go forward? Well, they could have said, Jesus, he's a good man. A person that would never come near me. Have nothing to do with me. I also think there's another important thing we can learn from this leper about some of the religious ideas. Leprosy in the Bible, the instructions about it come from the law. I thought it was quite interesting in our little play that was here earlier. There is the character deciding, I should do this, I shouldn't do that, the rules are there. Being pulled this way and pulled that way, what should I do? The law in the Old Testament gives us God's directions about the best way to live. And he also gave directions about dealing with something like the disease leprosy. Do you know what the law says? It says, this is how your God knows leprosy.
This is how you recognise it, and this is what you've got to do with those who have it. Nothing in the law actually says, this is how you treat it, this is how you cure it, this is how you get the person right again. All it is simply saying, this is how you recognise it's wrong. And I actually think leprosy does have a strong connection with sin, because the law shows us how we miss God's standard. If you think you're good, the best thing to do is go back to the Ten Commandments and start reading and say, Lord, measure up and tick them off. I think if you're actually honest, most of you won't get to tick the very first one and say, yep, I've done that. The very first one will fail out because it says, put God first. So we fail there, we don't even need to go any further. But the law says this is sin. It tells us how to recognise it. It tells us how to, you know, what it's like and what we should do about it. But it doesn't cure it, does it? The law doesn't cure sin, just like it never offered a cure for leprosy. There's only one way that leprosy can be cured, and there's only one way that sin can be cured. By God and by God alone. And whether this leper recognised that, I don't know. But he certainly knew he needed to go to someone who was, in a sense, in the domain of God. Someone who he knew he could trust in. And that's why we see most of these men who are outcasts, who are, you know, cut off from people, who are desperate. They go to the one person they know can probably help them. They have confidence in the ability of Jesus to heal them. And to heal in their situation. So you've got this man, the leper. Chapter 8, verse 2, we read, and a man with leprosy, what did he do? He came to Jesus. Verse 5 says, and a centurion, what did he do? He came to Jesus. These men knew their situation, they knew they needed help, and they said, let's go to Jesus. And they went to him. They came to Jesus. The leper asked him for himself. He recognised he personally needed help. Many of us need to recognise that we need that same sort of help. Particularly my relationship with God. If I don't have a relationship with God, then I can't really expect to ever have his goodness and his help. But the centurion, what an amazing man this guy is, he comes for another. And it's interesting in the Bible that there were parents who came for their children and others, you know, with aunts and uncles, but the centurion is the only one who ever came to Jesus for a slave. The only one. Never do we read anyone else going for a slave to Jesus, but the centurion goes. Why did they come to Jesus? Because they had faith in him. They knew he could help them. The leper, he knew he was a sinner. He had proof. He could say, look, I'm judged by God, I've got leprosy. I'm a sinner. He was willing to admit it. Sadly, there are so many today who will not admit that they are sinners. Will not admit that. They think they're too good. We'll talk a bit more about that soon. But he came to Jesus. But you know, he might have thought, will Jesus come to me? Or will he respond to me? Because Jesus is this good man, so called, and I'm a sinner, and he's not going to come to me, will he? But you know, he probably heard Jesus has been with other sinners. Jesus has helped other people. And he believed that Jesus would help him. So he puts aside, if you like, maybe his fear of being rejected, and says, I'm coming to trust in Jesus. The centurion, why does he come to Jesus? I mean, he's not even a Jew. And he's got probably no right to even expect a Jew to help him. He's got everything, you know, probably feels like that. But he was able to set aside his cultural differences. He's able to set aside his differences in maybe position. He's a commander of at least 100 men. Coming to a man that's just a wanderer in the places of Israel, because Jesus would have been just a wandering teacher to so many people. And he crosses that divide, if you like, as well. And he comes to him. And we read in verses 5 and 6, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. The Lord, he said, my servant lies at home, paralyzed, and in terrible suffering. What happens then? Well, it's in Jesus' hand, isn't it? The lepers come to him and said, Jesus, will you heal me? The centurion comes to him and says, Jesus, I've got a servant, he's in terrible suffering, he's paralyzed, and Luke would tell us he's about to die. It's in Jesus' hands. What would Jesus do? It's one of those remarkable pictures, these next couple of verses that we see in Scripture. Verse 3 of chapter 8, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, to be clean. And immediately he was cured and made clean from his leprosy. Jesus' compassion for this man is outstanding. Jesus knew about this man's lot in life. He knew about him being an outcast. He knew what he'd been experiencing in life. And what could Jesus have done? So many times we read in the Bible, Jesus said, you're healed. You know, just go. He just had to speak it and bring healing. But for this man, what did he do? Jesus actually reached out and touched him. Because he was so often cut off from others. Really, Jesus touched him. Said, you're right. Be healed. Jesus touched him. Can you imagine what that guy must have felt? I'm trying to think about it at times. I don't know whether he would have welled up with tears. You know, no one would come here. He'd have to walk around and say, unclean, unclean. And this man comes up and touches him. A remarkable picture. And then what about the remarkable picture that the centurion produces for us too? Jesus said to him, this is in verse 7, I will go and I will heal your servant. And Jesus responding to this foreigner says, I'm going to come. But that's not the end of this particular event, if you remember as we were reading earlier. The centurion shows a better understanding of who Jesus is than anybody else ever does within the accounts of the Gospels. Verse 8 and 9, I think I'll come up on the screen. The centurion replied, Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. But just say the word and my servant, he will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And I tell that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. The centurion knew what it was to have true authority. He gave orders. And Jesus responds with amazement in verses 10, and I'll read verse 13 as well. When Jesus heard this, he's astonished, and he said to those following him, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. Then Jesus, in verse 13, said to the centurion, go, it will be done just as you believed it would. And his servant was healed at that very hour. It's an amazing thing. Jesus, we read in the Bible, is amazed or astonished by two things. This one, the faith of a Gentile. The second time is in Mark chapter 6, verses 5 and 6, if you want to have a look. He's amazed at the lack of faith in the people of his own town. And you realise that Jesus is spoken of as being amazed twice. And one is for the faith of a Gentile, and one is for the lack of faith by his own people, of his own hometown. Here is the faith of a Gentile. Both men had come to Jesus, coming for healing, coming for help. They come to the only one who can help them. The leper, knowing he's a sinner, that Jesus is the only one who can help. The centurion coming to Jesus because he knows that Jesus has the authority just to say the word and serve to be healed. They come to him. Jesus is not just simply a good example to you and I about being, if you like, compassionate and touching people. He's not just a good example like that. He came to save people from their sin and from the penalty of their sin. That's why he came. If you want to know why he came, he didn't come down just to give you a good picture. He came to save. He came to save people like you and I from our death by his resurrection and his own death in dealing with our sin. That's the good news. And today, Jesus is offering for us the same good news that you can have your sins forgiven,
that you can have a home with me and not find yourself isolated from God. Because for us, we're isolated from God, just like the leper was as he walked down that road. Isolated from him. We can trust in Jesus because he's the one who offers that salvation. We also read in Acts chapter 4 verse 12, there is no other way but no other place to go. Salvation is found in no one else. For there is no other name under heaven by which men can be saved. He's the only one to go to. Those two men could have been like the guys in the big boat and say, let's give up, there's no way to get past. But they recognised there was someone who could help them get past the barrier in front of them. It was Jesus, and he was the only one. Today I believe there are two ways that generally people respond to the good news about Jesus. One group, as I said before, say, I'm not that bad. I'm not like that other person or this one. I'm not too bad. I'm not too far gone. And they believe wrongly that their God's just going to let it slide in on the skin of their teeth and they'll be okay. They're wrong. It's not the way it's going to work. But there are others who are probably a lot like the leper. They may be a bit like the centurion. He'll be saying, look, there's no chance for me. I've gone so far. I've done so many things wrong. God will never love me. And that's how many of us at times will feel. And we're wrong when we think like that too. God loves us. And he cares for us in a remarkable way. There is no one else who loves us like he does. It's really a very special thing. So I got the words of a lady called Corrie ten Boom, and they're actually by her sister, which I think might come up. Okay. She said this to Corrie ten Boom when they were in a World War II concentration camp. Betsy, the lady who said these words, died in a concentration camp. But she said, you must understand, as she spoke to her sister, we've got to tell people this. You must understand, there is no pit you can fall into that is so deep that the love of God for you is not deeper still. And for some of us, we feel like we're in this pit and there's no way out. You need to remember, God's love is deeper than that pit that you're in. Much deeper. Maybe you felt unlovable. Jesus still loves you. Maybe you felt useless. Jesus still rejoices over who you are and what you can do. Maybe you felt untouchable. But Jesus is reaching out his hand to you. The battle you are facing, he is able to help. Go to him. He loves you. And he's willing to touch you and transform you today. And that's who you should go to. Not necessarily me or anyone else here. You should go to Jesus. He's the one who will touch you and transform.